This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The 2019 legislative session is winding down and bills are being sent to Governor Ron DeSantis to sign. Bills heading to the governor's desk include an attempt to make the road safer by cracking down on texting and driving. Lawmakers have steered more money towards K-12 education, but public education advocates are unhappy about an expansion of taxpayer-funded vouchers to send more kids to private schools. A bill allowing teachers to be trained to carry firearms at school has passed, but it's a voluntary program, so just how many schools will actually start arming teachers? Meanwhile, voters have ticked the box next to Amendment 4, restoring the voting rights of felons who served their time, may not see that amendment carried out as they expected. Lawmakers passed a bill requiring felons who served their time to pay off court costs and fees before they can vote. Lawmakers have also been tussling over whether to allow smokable medical marijuana and just how potent that drug should be. So whether it's medical marijuana, texting and driving, arming teachers, restoring voting rights or any other bills this session, what are you paying the most attention to and what will these law changes mean for you? You can join the conversation. We're at 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. Send us a tweet. We're at WMFE Orlando. Well, joining us from Tallahassee is Tramell Gomes, who had a little bit of a change of plan. Our reporter, Anna Ceballos, the state capital, had to be drawn away on some urgent session business. So, Tramell, thank you for joining us at such late notice. Appreciate that.
No problem. Glad to be here. It's the last few days of this legislative session, so it's quite exciting here in Tallahassee.
Certainly. Give us a sense of what it's been like. I mean, other sessions have been so contentious, you know, to the point of stalling, necessitating special sessions, etc. But I get the sense that things are getting done in session and that lawmakers are working to pass bills, whether or not folks appreciate the kind of laws that are being passed. The lawmakers up there are kind of working pretty well in concert to get laws passed. What's your impression been of the last 60 days?
Yeah, like technically we're going into overtime just slightly, but it's nothing compared to what we've seen like in the last few years where things were going crazy. But we're technically going into overtime due to the 72-hour required cooling off period to handle the budget. So on Saturday, around early afternoon, is when we're going to officially close out this legislative session with the dropping of the handkerchief, the sine die ceremony. But with in the last few days of session, it's always the back and forth to make sure bills are passed. Like for me, I'm always like, what were you guys doing early on in these, maybe the first 30 days before getting down to the wire, when they're running back and forth to make sure they get those last-minute priorities in. But that's where we are now. Of course, there were some controversial, heated moments. There were some few advocates and protesters who were arrested in the last few days over the sanctuary cities debate. So, that's where we are right now.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, as you say, those folks were carried out. The Sanctuary Cities is one of the kind of big deal bills. I mean, there have been quite a few controversial bills, right? But Sanctuary Cities is something that has been really getting people's attention. So what is the latest on that? What's happening there? And what is your sense, Tramell Gomes, of, you know, how happy lawmakers are about that? Because it sounds to me that things are pretty much split along party lines there, Democrats voting no for the Sanctuary City bill and Republicans giving it the okay.
Yes, exactly. It's a partisan issue down the line. Many would argue that, you know, it's an issue, it's a solution in search of a problem that's not really here, since Florida technically doesn't have like a sanctuary city. But under the bill that that was passed, local law enforcement and other state agencies would be required to honor federal law enforcement's requests for an immigrant detainer, meaning a request that another law enforcement agency can remove a removable alien under federal immigration law. I'm trying to read the specifics of the bill. The bill would essentially make the request a requirement. So it calls on state agencies to honor the federal request to make those detainees or detain and have the right to do so. Of course, Republicans are moving forward with this. Democrats are adamantly opposed. And what you saw in the last few days or throughout session, actually, were coalition groups, immigrant right groups who were saying this is going to lead to racial discrimination. It's not right for the state. It's going to lead to it's not good for law enforcement. There were some law enforcement officials who said this were not something that we need right now. And even with the former governor, Jeb Bush, who made the visit to Tallahassee.
Yeah, he was recently there to see the passage of that that school voucher bill, right? And he was applauding that, saying that this is kind of, you know, the thing that he was happy to see kind of through to fruition. But yeah, right, as you say, former Governor Jeb Bush there to observe. Back to your point, though, Tramell Gomes, on the Sanctuary City issue, do you get the sense that you know, Republicans who've been around a little bit longer are happy with the way this is shaking out?
In the end, it's all about the broader message outside of the details. So the fact that they have something passed that they may not be happy with in the details, like the overarching message is like, you know, they'll be able to walk out victorious that they are banning sanctuary cities. And that is a talking point that they plan on using when it comes to elections. And that was the thought process going in for the opponents. This is unnecessary. This is just to feed the base, especially for helping President Trump and his reelection efforts going forward, just to have something on the table to tout that, like, you know, this is what we did to protect our state from these unscrupulous characters coming into the country, which of course is from the opponents, that is not the case.
Right, and I guess we'll have to see just how this is enforced. You know, if Governor DeSantis indeed signs this bill into law. A couple of other things, of course, making a lot of headlines in the last 2 months and even before that. Amendment 4, the bill to implement the amendment, well, rather, the amendment to reinstate voting rights for former felons who served their sentence in Florida. That amendment essentially written to be, quote, self-executing, but there's been a lot of back and forth in Tallahassee on how to actually roll it out, and the latest iteration is that you know, court fines and fees and everything else associated with a felon sentence, those have to be paid off before somebody can have their voting rights reinstated. And a lot of opposition to that from people who voted for the amendment, people who worked to get that through. What are you hearing from lawmakers? What has the kind of debate been like on that, Tramell Gomes?
Oh, there's lots of debate on that. It's the same thing because, of course, people who are opposed to this add-on of requiring the payment of fines before they get what essentially they've been waiting for. They're like, voters passed overwhelmingly to allow Amendment 4 to allow those who were formerly in prison to get their rights restored after they've completed all of their requirements. And they see this as a poll tax and other things, another impediment in the way of what voters actually wanted. Some said, like, this was unnecessary. They went in front and blocked the natural process of giving voters what they want after the successful passage of Amendment 4. So there's a lot of opposition. Millions of voters who were waiting to get their rights restored, like, it was just a lot of confusion for them. The plan was trying to figure out how do they automatically get their rights restored quickly. And now there's this additional barrier that they have to worry about, and this other wrench in the way. So people are not happy with this addition, and we'll see if the governor signs this.
In the lead up to this legislative session last year, we saw a lot of activism from those young students at Parkland advocating rather for increased gun safety laws in the aftermath of that school shooting there. So What has that translated into as far as law, and what are we seeing as far as the bill that would allow teachers to be armed in classrooms with some training? What are you hearing on that, and what's the latest there, Tramiel?
What we're hearing is that the legislature, sort of like, you know, in their unique way, they've done their own thing. There was some opposition against it, but as far as listening to teachers and some law enforcement officials who were opposed to arming teachers, there is this a bill that would allow for the arming of teachers, regardless of those associations, parent-teachers associations, the school associations saying, no, we don't want this this type of effort. So that is going forward to the governor's desk, and yeah, it was quite controversial. Students were opposed to it, as you know. They became more active, more involved after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. They came to the Capitol, and they did so much, and they're to be commended to trying their best to change the process. But of course, it came down to politics and the very powerful lobby here in Tallahassee and across the country, the NRA, and they ultimately prevailed in making sure they get their wishes through the process. So that's where we are there.
And I guess we'll have to see how that actually sort of plays out as far as which school districts say, yes, we are going to be arming some teachers. I know there's been a bit of opposition from a lot of parent-teacher associations and indeed school boards around the state. I know you've got to take off in a minute or two, Tramiel Gomes, but before you go, I just want to get your sense of what it's been like with this new administration in Tallahassee compared to the previous 8 years under the governorship of Rick Scott. Kind of your impression there, what's your sense of kind of things in Tallahassee these days?
It's still new in Tallahassee, and there was a lot of, like, you know, surprisingly working together to get a few things done. Governor DeSantis necessarily didn't get everything on his wish list through the budget process, but it's nothing to cry about. It's the process. You don't always get everything you want, but there's a lot of at least working together and making sure the Republican agenda was being met. So a lot of what they wanted came through, and that's where we are with this legislative session. It's one for DeSantis to be okay. He's getting his walking legs. He's able to walk, and he's understanding the Florida legislative process and the back and forth with the House and the Senate. And yeah, that's how it is. It was a smooth session for DeSantis, and we saw the very conservative Jose Oliva in the House, and especially with certain issues, and they weren't always getting along between the House and Senate, particularly with sanctuary cities and stuff like that. So that's where we are this session.
So what, real quick, Tramiel, what happens from here on out? What's the final steps in this 2019 legislative session before everything's signed and sealed?
The final steps, we're waiting for the cooling off period to end, which is the budget review process. That officially ends on Saturday at around like 1 o'clock. And from there, signy die, and they all go home to their districts to tout what they've brought home. We saw some interesting things throughout session, like, you know, there's a approval of a toll road that no one really asked for. And like, you know, infrastructure plans that no one really wished for. So this is the time they go home and tout the things that they pass. There were some good bills, and there were some concerning bills, particularly on the when it comes to public records and transparency. I believe there's a bill that would block the public, for instance, in the situation if there's another Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Hopefully not. There's a public records exemption that would block the public from seeing a videotape of a mass shooting and stuff like that out of the public record. So on one hand, we may have this new bill that arms teachers, but if something goes wrong, there's another bill that blocks us from seeing how this all works out. So a lot of stuff came through this legislative session, so much to dive in, and we can keep talking about some of the stuff that came out of session to make sure, a lot of stuff passed.
Tramell, indeed we will. We'll check back in with you as the weeks after session unfold to see how some of those things are playing out. Tramell Gomes is the host of the Rotunda podcast up in Tallahassee. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And a note, we are in the final stretch of our spring silent drive. You can make a donation over on our website, wmfe.org. We've got about $110,000 to go to reach our $300,000 goal. Sure love to hear from you. That's wmfe.org/support. Still to come, we dive into analysis of the session as the clock ticks down. Which bills have you been paying attention to? Were you disappointed by what's been passed so far? Do you feel vindicated? We're at 1-866-338-5252. You can also tweet over your questions and comments at WMFE Orlando.
No need to have that driveway moment actually sitting in your driveway. The WMFE mobile app is a powerful way to listen live or on demand to 90.7 News and 90.7 HD2 Classical Music. Visit your Apple or Android store today to download the WMFE app and stay connected.
Sponsored by Rollins Crummer Graduate School of Business and Orlando Health.
Hi, I'm Peter.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Naomi. We're the Simon family from the Space Coast, and we're proud members of WMFE's McCain Society. Information today comes at us faster than ever, not only from traditional outlets, but in tweets, threads, and feeds. We rely on NPR to cut through the noise and get down to the news.
We count on WMFE for accurate reporting and insightful programming, and we believe that informed communities are empowered communities. Please join us in supporting our local public radio station. Call 1-800-785-2020 or visit WMFE.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the final days of the legislative session, taking a closer look at some of the bills making their way to the governor's desk, and we're taking your calls. What's grabbed your attention this session? Are you happy with the spending on education? Is more choice by way of taxpayer-funded school vouchers a good thing? Is Amendment 4 rolling out the way you expected it would? What about the Sanctuary City Bill? What does that mean to you? We're at 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us with your questions and comments on Twitter as well. That's at WMFE Orlando. With us in the studio, former Democratic state lawmaker Dick Batchelor. Thanks for joining us, Dick.
Thank you.
Also joined by Republican political analyst Frank Torres. Frank, thank you as well.
Happy Sunny Day Eve, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
Sunny Day Eve. Indeed, what will Santa bring in the way of bills? I want to jump straight into the Amendment 4 and what the implementation of that amendment means. That's restoring the voting rights of felons who've served their time. The House passed a bill requiring felons who've served their time to pay off court costs and fees before they can vote. Some advocates for voting rights restoration say that's equivalent to a poll tax. Of course, Republicans who are backing this particular bill say that's complete nonsense. One of the people responsible for putting the amendment on the ballot was Desmond Mead. He's the executive director of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, recently named to the Time 100 list for 2019. Well, Mead talked to me a couple of weeks back. He said the amendment was written to be self-executing with minimal lawmaker involvement, and he's not okay with the way the legislature is tackling this amendment.
It's far from okay, right? When you're talking about court costs and fines and fees, a lot of those monetary obligations are administrative. They're not necessarily part of that sentence. What we're saying is that when you complete your sentence by completing terms of incarceration, completing terms of supervision, that's where you complete your sentence. Those other administrative fees that they're talking about, it should not have any bearing on whether or not American citizens should be able to register to vote.
Well, that's Desmond Mead. They're the face of voter rights restoration in Florida. Some concerns about the bill to roll out Amendment 4. What are you thinking about this bill? Does that have a personal impact on you? Are you concerned at all about the way this amendment that Florida voters voted for to restore the voting rights of felons who served their time in Florida can actually get their voting rights back. We're at 1-866-338-5252. Dick Batchelor, I want to throw this to you. What do you think? Is this the way? Is this what voters anticipated when they said yes to that amendment?
I don't think so. I think Desmond's right. By the way, Desmond was also named Central Floridian of the Year by the Orlando Sentinel for his leadership. One, two, this constitutional amendment passed about 67% of the vote, so the mandate from the public was very, very clear. And the legislature playing around with this. Now, what they did end up doing, we think, is that we basically have a compromise from the Senate, which the court could still waive the fees that are pending. So then each court could have that discretion. So you still wouldn't be very uniform throughout the state of Florida. I would anticipate a lawsuit basically challenging the statute as being really in conflict with the intent, the clear intent of the constitutional amendment, and they would try to get it waived.
Indeed. And on that lawsuit note, I mean, if things go to the state Supreme Court, how do you see that playing out?
Well, the governor's appointed three very conservative people to the court, so they would tend to be politically in his favor. But I think the constitutional amendment process is very clear. I think the intent and the language is very clear. So I still think they would have a good case. But they might wait and go back to the next session to see if they can modify what's been done. Mm-hmm. But I think a legal challenge is in the offing.
Frank Torres, what about your thoughts there? I mean, what does this kind of this whole process tell you about how amendments are rolled out in Florida in general?
Well, yeah, much respect to Desmond Meade. He's been a really effective voice for his cause and has done some good things. But he's half right. The promotion of this amendment last year was restoring rights to felons that have paid their debts to society. Mm-hmm. These people literally have a debt to society. So while I do believe that the legislature certainly needs a lot of work implementing the will of the people and they need to get this show on the road, in this particular talking instance, I believe that this bill is right and that these debts do need to be paid.
Mm-hmm. We've got
I reject one thing here, because it related to what the legislature has done, though, and we don't know the final outcome of this because it's pending, is they basically want to make it harder to actually amend the Constitution. You know, they went from 50% plus one to two-thirds, you know, 60%. And now they want to guarantee that anybody who collects petitions can't be paid, they have to be a resident of Florida, making it very difficult to amend the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And also making it very difficult to change laws locally, particularly as it regards the tax increases, wanting to take that 50% plus one to 60% at least, if not two-thirds vote. So the legislature philosophically really is trying to restrict the ability for individual, either local government, people to petition their government. So they're making it difficult. So there's a philosophical jam here, I think.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to the phones. We're getting some folks calling in on this particular issue. Daniel calling in from Titusville. What are you thinking about with regard to Amendment 4?
Hey, Matthew, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
So I worked on some campaigns in 2016 and 2018, and I did some canvassing. And I encountered a lot of people who had been disenfranchised by the system. They were people with felony convictions in their past, but they were long in their past. And they told me some really terrible stories about how difficult it was. Some of them had pursued getting their voting rights restored, and it was exorbitantly expensive. My understanding is that Florida's process for getting felons voting rights restored was deemed unconstitutional and that they had a deadline to fix it, and they didn't fix it in time, and they put the amendment on the Constitution for us to vote on Amendment 4. And we said yes, that we want to just let them vote if they've paid their debt to society. And I just don't understand why it's so much easier to get your rights to own a gun restored than it is to get your rights to vote.
Daniel, I hear you loud and clear. Thanks for weighing in. We do have a few more calls to get through, so I'm going to get to those right now. I believe Tucker calling in. Are you on the line there, Tucker?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thinking is that our representatives don't seem to want to represent the people. They have their agenda, and, you know, we're all about choice in schools, but why is it that we have a double standard where the the voucher schools are not held to the same standard as our public schools. This isn't apples to apples. How do you compare the two? Hmm. We all want to make our education system better. I think choice is a good thing. But if you can't quantify what's going on, then it doesn't really serve a purpose except whatever their agenda happens to be, along with the Amendment 4 idea. The people spoke, and they're trying to change the rules.
Right.
They do it time and time again, and they are not representing the majority of the Floridians.
Tucker, thanks. I'm sensing a bit of a theme here in our callers so far, making some comparisons with other rights that are more easily restored than voting. I want to get one more call in here from Martin. Martin, what's on your mind thinking about this particular amendment and the way it's been implemented by the legislature in Florida?
Yeah, hi. I have a question and then a comment. And my question is, has anybody started a GoFundMe site to help these people who were now voted by Florida citizens to have their voting rights restored? And now the Republican legislature is doing an end run around that vote, like the last two callers just said. And so I'm curious to whether anybody there knows whether there's a GoFundMe site that's been created to pay this off. And the comment is, this is, as the two callers just said, another example of a minority thinking they can subvert the majority's vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Republicans, both locally and statewide and nationally, need to be a little careful of how far they try to take this stuff. Because they're going to end up with, if not an actual revolution, a real, a virtual revolution on their hands. And the pendulum isn't just going to swing a little bit to the other side. It's going to swing way to the other side.
Hmm.
They'd be a whole lot better off trying to find a middle ground.
Martin,
thanks. I'll hang up now.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, Martin. So that's an interesting point about the political pendulum swing. We've seen that sort of Florida is a bit of a purple state, so to speak, and the margins are pretty thin, especially when you think about things like presidential elections and the way the state goes there. Frank Torres, your thoughts on the caller Martin's kind of question about a GoFundMe? That'd be a pretty mighty GoFundMe, and I'm wondering if maybe some individuals might have their own funds going.
If I'm not mistaken, did Martin ask for a GoFundMe to pay somebody else's court costs for a crime they committed? I mean, I'm sure that's probably not at the core what he meant, but that's what he's saying. He's asking other people to come in and pay for the mistakes of others. And as for this continued versus the people philosophy, and I'm not going to be completely on the right side for this entire broadcast. They've done plenty of things. There is still a Republican majority in the Florida State Legislature, in the Senate, in the House, and in the Cabinet and Governor's Mansion. So, I mean, this is what you guys voted for. So, you know, that's one angle of many issues in Tallahassee right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think he alluded to on education, too. The fact is there is a more liberal policy regarding education when it comes. More liberal, more conservative, I should say, because the funding that's going to these private schools, the charter schools, and the charter schools don't have to meet the same requirements as you do in a public education. So while it's okay to have choice in these charter schools, particularly the public charter schools that have credentials, you should also fund education, public education, as the Constitution requires. So there needs to be a balance there. Now, let me say one good thing about the governor. In his budget proposal, he did propose a substantial increase in funding through K-12. Last year, it was only 57 cents per student.
Mm-hmm.
This year is approaching $270 per student. So I have to give the governor credit for taking the lead on funding public education while he's also pushing very hard for the private charter schools.
Well, on the education issue, there is that bump in per-student spending. Of course, many folks would say it's not really enough. And on the flip side of that, there's also plans to allocate construction and maintenance funding to charter schools but not public schools.
Yeah,
so a bit of
absolutely.
A give and take there.
And that gets back to the overarching philosophy of the Republican legislature, particularly the House. Here you are, basically wanting to take monies. I led the campaign twice, 2002 and 2013, to pass a half a penny sales tax to fund public construction of schools, raised probably in 23 years $4 billion. Now, when we had this campaign, we listed the schools that would be replaced or repaired. none of them include charter schools. And now the legislature comes along and says, notwithstanding the votes by the public to fund public education infrastructure, we're going to now make it available to private charter schools. Wrong. Absolutely. That would invite a legal challenge first day.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that whole voucher issue?
Well, I believe that charter schools definitely need more supervision. The Orlando Sentinel did an excellent series last year, Schools Without Rules, I believe, that highlighted these things. But as far as the charter school conversation goes in Tallahassee, a lot of these legislatures believe that this is the will of their constituents that want this sort of flexibility, and this is where they want the monies to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's going to be a lot of other issues we talk about today, but with education, a lot of these parents are going to actually have to pick up the phone and have a calm conversation, not a more energetic one that we've seen before, about the true direction of where what kind of allocations they want for education in the state, because there seems to be a lot of confusion right now. A lot of parents don't know what's going on, what their lawmakers are doing in Tallahassee with their money for the education of their kids. So there needs to be a lot of education on all sides.
Mm-hmm. I want to get in another call here on the issue of Amendment 4. We've got Brian on the line. Brian, I believe you have a kind of a personal interest in this particular amendment.
Oh, yes, sir. Hey, good morning, guys. And I certainly don't want to oversimplify this, but fortunately for me, back in the 90s, I'm a former felon,
mm-hmm.
and I was allowed simply to submit in writing to the state to have my rights restored. They were, and very simply, guess what we got out of that? We got a voting, contributing citizen of Central Florida. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
What do you make of this debate then about what's going on now with rights restoration? I mean, how do you see that playing out? And do you think it's fair to be saying to folks, aside from serving the term of your sentence and as far as jail time, whatever that may be, you also got to make good on all those court costs and fees, et cetera?
That seems pretty arbitrary. But I truthfully don't know. I understand that some debts have to be paid. Clearly mine were. And I don't, when it gets into the specifics of case by case, I just really couldn't say. I just think the trend, and I think we should all agree to this, the trend to get people involved, secure the rights that they are due, serves us all.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate you weighing in there and sharing a little bit of perspective on the way it was back in the 90s and the way things are going now. A lot more to talk about. As we were saying, we're talking about texting and driving, education, sanctuary cities and all that. So stay with us. We'll be right back in a minute after this break.
Check out our website at WMFE.org for the most recent Are We There Yet podcast. Access local and NPR news content, as well as our community calendar. Bookmark WMFE.org and stay connected.
Sponsored by Rollins Crummer Graduate School of Business and Orlando Health.
Hi, I'm Steve Yasko, WMFE's Director of Content. Every year we renew our programming agreement with National Public Radio. You wouldn't believe that it costs over $500,000 to bring you Morning Edition, All Things Considered, 1A, Wait, Wait, and all the other programs you enjoy every year. That's why we need your financial support today. Your gift of $10 or $12 a month will help WMFE pay for all the incredible programs you hear every week. That's how we stay independent. Become a monthly member at WMFE.org.
Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the legislative session in final days right now, waiting for that budget to get approved and signed and before lawmakers head back to their constituencies with proof of what they got passed in the last 60 days. We're joined by Dick Batchelor and Frank Torres, political commentators here in the studio. I want to hear from you as well. What's on your mind, thinking about some of the bills that have been passed, some of the laws that have been debated up in Tallahassee in the last couple of months? 1-866-338-5252 is the number. You can also reach out to us on Twitter at WMFE Orlando.
Texting and driving, this has been something which has been in the works for a number of years now. Lawmakers trying to get something done on cracking down on texting and driving hasn't quite succeeded up until this session, at least. It looks like it may be going to the governor's desk. So the texting and driving bill would make it a primary offence to text and drive. Here's former state lawmaker Bob Cortez, now senior administrator for governmental and community affairs, with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office explaining what exactly this bill would do.
Under current law, if you're caught texting and driving, they cannot pull you over unless you had a primary offense to pull you over for, like a seatbelt or running a red light. And if you were texting, then they can issue a secondary ticket for that. This new law, what it would do is that it would give law enforcement the authority to pull you over and issue a citation if they see you texting and driving.
Mm-hmm. So that is Bob Cortez there, Senior Administrator for Government and Community Affairs with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office. Frank Torres, I'm wondering if there may be some issues with enforcing this law once it becomes law, if that's what happens indeed, and in fact kind of proving that somebody was texting while driving. How do you see this shaking out?
Well, first off, I applaud the legislature for passing this bill. I got hit by a texter driver a couple of years ago, and it really threw my whole situation into a tailspin. So for one, I'm happy to see it pass. There will be problems implementing this, but that's where education comes into play. You got to run those commercials. You got to throw up those billboards. You got to take a real aggressive approach to letting the people know that this is a more serious offense and that you shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, do you think it's going to make a serious difference to road safety in Florida?
I applaud, as Frank, the passage of this legislation, making it a primary offense. But the fines, like $30 or $40, it's not a big deal. I don't think it discourages people. And it is dangerous. I've been hit by someone who was texting from behind. So, and it's out there. And I see people all the time just driving and texting on I-4 and on the 408. So I hopefully it will dissuade people from doing it. The penalty is minor financially. So we'll have to see how it works. But it is a step definitely in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. What about concerns over profiling and privacy? Because I know those are some of the things that might have thrown a wrench in the works in previous years.
But I don't get that. I mean, I don't get the profiling thing. If you're watching somebody texting, mm-hmm. you know, you identify that person. I don't see this being a profiling kind of issue.
Okay, well, we've got some other calls to get through here. I want to take a call here from Gina now. Gina, what are you thinking about this legislative session? What's on your mind? What do you think the most important thing is to focus on here?
Well, I believe that one of my main issues is that voters need to vote for politicians who will not hurt them
right.
and not be surprised when they start working the way they're working this session. The first bill that has come out that I'm concerned about is I'm very unsatisfied about the workaround for Amendment 4,
mm-hmm.
that the voters were not respected, and making higher bars for changing our Constitution is troublesome, very troublesome. That's making it difficult for the common Floridian to make their voice heard. And also the bill about education and that huge bill that they put all kinds of stuff in that should not have been in there. Charter schools are not good for the public, and it dilutes public school funding, which is hurting the whole state. And teachers should not be armed, in my opinion, and many other people's opinion. I'm a parent and a volunteer for the schools, and it's just a bad idea. So mm-hmm. those are my opinions.
Gina, thank you so much for your call. A few things to unpack there. First of all, I think that the notion of charter schools being a bad thing is a little bit of a blanket statement. I'm sure there are a lot of parents who send their kids to charter schools, good ones, that would say, look, that's not the case at all. And the reason we sent our kids to a charter school is because we weren't getting what we wanted from the alternative. But Dick Batchelor, I wonder about everything else that's sort of been packed into that education bill. Have you had time to sift through it and pick out some of the things that are good and bad about it?
Well, you know, it is an omnibus bill, they call it. If not an ominous bill, it could be an ominous
both,
bill.
Both.
Yeah, it could be both. But there is that there. But one of the things that strikes me as interesting, too, is they're changing the Bright Futures program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get 100% funding at a certain SAT score, math and science, and then at 75% you get a different scoring, but it pays fully your college education. However, they changed the scoring now, and according to the Orlando Sentinel reporting this morning, it will impact the black students most significantly, where a number of black students will no longer qualify for either the primary 100% college education or the 75%, and it will impact, you know, whites and Hispanics too. So I think on the higher education side, they're instead of funding it appropriately, more funding for bright futures, less students will qualify for it. It will impact minority students more than non-minority students. So that's one piece that I find a little troubling.
Frank Torres, our caller, also made a point about arming teachers. I know you have some thoughts on that. Good move, bad move?
Now, I personally was in favor of arming teachers. But this is because of two reasons. Number one, I think it sends a message for anybody that looks to attack the most vulnerable people in our society. And I believe the teachers should have a choice on whether to participate or not. But also, a lot of people are overlooking the home rule or local aspect of this. I don't believe that right now anybody in our Tri-County area and for the most part our listening area plans on implementing this. And it should be up to those local school boards because they're closer to the voters at home who have these kids in this school. But as for the principle of allowing teachers to be armed, I support it because in addition to protecting the students, that teacher also needs to take a stand because they have families at home waiting for them as well.
What about all those things that have been thrown up in opposition, though? You know, the risk of something going wrong, a teacher making a mistake, the amount of training they get. I mean, it's what, 144 hours or
144
something?
Hours.
Is that enough?
That is enough. I am in the military. I was formerly in the military, and I've handled firearms. And a lot of these people won't be going in handling a firearm for the first time. A lot of them, if they're confident enough to carry one to school, will have had previous training before. So it's 144 hours in addition to the state, to whatever training they have already. And like I said, you know, it's a local powered bill, and the local school boards will have final say. But adding another layer in addition to our school resource officers, our well-trained school resource officers, to keeping these dirtbags from attacking our school children, I'm all for it.
I want to get to another controversial bill now, Sanctuary Cities. Dick Batchelor, this bill has been kind of controversial from the get-go. Will it be a win for Ron DeSantis getting lawmakers to pass it, though?
Well, let me respond to two points, if I could. One is on arming teachers. I'm opposed to it. Sure. I think teachers are there to teach our students. I don't think they'd be trained to be armed. If you want to put in more deputies that are resource officers dedicated to law enforcement, well-trained, that's fine. To protect the schools, but arming teachers, I think it's wrong. But on your other question, which was?
Sanctuary cities.
Sanctuary cities. Oh, there's a goes. That was a piece of legislation in search of a problem. There aren't any sanctuary cities in the state of Florida. So you're outlawing something that's not there now. But I think it's red meat to the base. I think that's what it is. I think it's just strictly political. There were provisions, though, that were going to basically, I think, $5,000 a day penalty against a local law official that did not comply with the law. The Senate took that out, so it doesn't have those provisions in there anymore. But it's kind of a gratuitous throw of some little bit of red meat to the base on the Republican side.
Frank Torres, how do you see this being enforced, if at all?
I think it adds another nightmare or another challenge to local law enforcement. I did not like this bill, despite being on the same party with a lot of lawmakers that voted for it. I think it's un-Republican. I think it's un-American and anti-immigrant.
What is it that it's un-Republican about it?
It's expanding the influence of a higher government over the local municipalities. This is our state lawmakers telling our local law enforcement officers what to do, how to do their jobs, and worse, to even take on the responsibilities of a federal agency. And like Dick said, there are no sanctuary cities in Florida. I think this was a complete waste of time. It ate up so much clock up there in Tallahassee. There were so many other things we were debating about, and it's a big waste of time so that Joe Gruters can get a pat on the head from Donald Trump on Twitter.
But you know, but there is a worse bill. This is going to – I want to give an award for this bill. There is a bill in search of a problem, and that is you would not – the bill that passed the legislature, this is really high priority, will not allow local governments to outlaw plastic straws.
Oh, yes, the plastic straw bill.
Big issue, big issue. Now, I don't know who the sponsor of that bill is, but they must have a lot of spare time to worry about whether or not you can, again, preempt local government for a decision on outlawing – straw. So that was going to be, I expect to see that in history books. Civics classes, I am sure, like, could be like middle school mock legislative session outlawing local straws.
So that was the last straw for you?
the less of me.
Well, what do you think about this? I mean, that kind of ties into the whole environmental question. Are we doing enough to keep our beaches clean? Is this just a step in the wrong direction here, do you think, Frank? Or well, what do you think about it?
Well, I think that, you know, well, for one, I believe the whole attitude towards the environment by this legislature has been different. I think that was part of the culture change with Ron DeSantis as opposed to Rick Scott. Obviously, there's still a lot of work to be done, and there's going to be a lot of these kind of bills moving forward. But, I mean, it was just – there are just some very bizarre angles to this legislative session, and it's just something that we're going to have to move forward looking forward in the future to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about the environment, we've got a caller here who has some thoughts about toll roads. Eugene, thanks for bearing with us. You're on the air. What are your thoughts on these this toll road bill in particular?
Senate Bill 768, which was passed by the House and the Senate, which is now on Governor DeSantis' desk to be signed or vetoed, is the three new toll roads going up through the northwest part of the state up to the Great Big Bend area.
Mm-hmm.
And these roads are totally unneeded. And we're all kind of scratching our heads why this even came up this time. But it did pass, and it's now sitting on his desk. And hopefully we're encouraging all of our citizens that call him and tell him to please veto this, because we're getting killed within our own cities with traffic today, and this does nothing to help us. So we're all kind of like scratching our head, why did this even come up? So that's my thought.
Eugene, thank you so much for weighing in. Dick Batchelor, more toll roads, are they necessary?
Absolutely, where they're putting them in is questionable. I mean, this came out of the blue. Of course, Gavano, the Senate president, sponsored the bill, and as the caller said, these toll roads are going in the middle of absolutely no place under the illusion that it will relieve some of the traffic on I-4 and 95. It's also trying to waive some of the environmental impact, environmental studies. Every environmental group in Florida, every major environmental group is asking the governor to veto it. Hey, look, if you need transportation funding, don't we need it here in Orlando? Bring some money here, bring some money, or take some money to Miami. All you're going to do is perpetuate growth. If for every exit that's put on a toll road, you basically have opened up to commercial development. And it's just – it's a bad break, very bad president. It came out of no place. Again, it's a solution in search of a problem.
But at least folks won't be texting while driving on these brand-new toll roads.
They might have time. They'll be in the middle of no place.
Frank Torres, you're chuckling over there, but what does this kind of tell you about the legislative process? And, I mean, is there an upside to a toll road up in the panhandle?
It tells me that these toll road people have some very good lobbyists. That's what it tells me.
These were
the roads at the beginning of the broadcast Tramiel was talking about that nobody asked for.
Mm-hmm.
It's a head-scratcher. This is the one thing that everybody can get out is that we don't like toll roads, and we don't like toll roads in locations where they shouldn't be. And yeah, it is a head scratcher. It's an unfortunate aspect, the shadow that which creeps into every legislative session where these projects just seem to land everywhere. And we'll see what the governor does. It's most likely, I believe, going to get the green light. But
hey, it'll be a high occupancy lane for tractors, I think.
There you go.
All right, well,
let's get some real use out of them roads while we're up there.
In the final few seconds of this, I did want to touch on smokable medical marijuana. There's been a lot of back and forth over this. Debates now on the THC level, which I know a lot of advocates for medical marijuana aren't particularly happy with. Frank Torres, where do you see this going?
You know, we talked about implementing amendments. This thing, unlike the last one, which I think had a valid argument, this one has no valid argument. This is one of those instances where the legislature needs to get their act together and pass these amendments.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, the public spoke. It was very, very clear. If you're going to have a legalized medical marijuana, whether you take a pill, you ingest it, you smoke it, I mean, who cares if you're giving medical marijuana to somebody who has one of the prescribed conditions, all of which are very serious? Who cares how they take it? Just implement the Constitutional Amendment as passed.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of bills tend to die in session, but there is some life for some other things. Visit Florida has a lifeline, Frank Torres,
before we close out here.
Revisit Florida.
Live to die another day. What a waste of money. I'm very opinionated. On Visit Florida, I don't think we need any more help marketing agencies, which are doing very well, and hopefully it'll fester and die next year.
We got Visit Florida at $50 million. You've got Orange County Convention and Visitors Bureau spending all this money, and you've got Disney that makes $7 billion a year. I know they need the money to promote themselves. I can see it being a priority.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dick Batchelor, thank you for your time. Former Democratic state lawmaker and founder of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Also joined by Frank Torres, Republican political analyst. You can find his commentary on politics, sports, culture, and more over at franktorres.org. Frank, thank you as well.
Thank you, sir.
Support for Intersection comes from Advent Health and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Technical direction from Juan Gualda. Production assistance from Danielle Pryor for today's show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're over on the NPR One app. More than halfway to our goal for our spring silent drive. We need your help to wrap it out, about $110,000 shy of that $300,000 goal. You can help us out by becoming a sustaining member or top up your contribution by calling 1-800-785-2020 or going to wmfe.org/support. We can also check out our thank you gifts. Your support makes local news and programs like Intersection possible. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.